This episode is brought to you by SolarWinds Identity Monitor. Check whether your credentials have been found in a data breach and get notified about any future breach exposure. Visit solarwinds.com/identity-monitor.
Welcome to SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm your episode host, Brandon Schopp, and with me today is Chris LeConte from SpyCloud, and we're here to talk about the ever-rising threat of account takeover. Chris, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. So I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at SpyCloud. Previous to this, I was in financial services for over 15 years, spending a fair amount of that time, more than I'd like, in a lot of risk and security meetings.
Fantastic. And so what really IT pros want to know is how do you be proactive against account takeover? And then, you know, from a budgetary perspective and convincing my boss in order to provision a tool like this, you know, what are some of the arguments and some of the data points that I can use as an IT pro in order to have that discussion? So we'll be going through in this podcast today about the market, about some of the higher profile type of breaches that have happened, as well as what are some mitigations that you can take to prevent account takeover. So first, let's kind of start, you know, fundamentally, what is account takeover?
Sure. So account takeover, or also known as ATO, very frequently, is when someone gains access to an account that they shouldn't have access to, simply put, right? We hear about it all the time. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the reporting that's been done related to how common this is. But ultimately, someone logs in to something they shouldn't have access to.
Got it. And typically, you know, what are the types of tactics and methodologies that people are using in order to get these credentials and accounts?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple of different ways that an account could be taken over. The two primary ways is certainly one is what we would call credential stuffing, or using a compromised credential, which we'll spend a lot of time talking about today. And then the other is phishing, right? Mm-hmm. Someone sends you a link, you click on it, you think you're logging into the right site. In reality, you're logging into a bad actor site and they're capturing that information.
Yeah, a lot of times in the press these days when they talk about phishing, a lot of times that has to deal with malware. Mm-hmm. They don't think of even other fundamental use cases like this to where somebody can get your credentials and then use them in order to breach your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to simplify it, it's generally kind of thrown together mm-hmm. and they're saying phishing is used or how it was used. In reality, you look at something like the Verizon data breach report that talks about the tactics that are used by bad actors to cause a breach. And I'd recommend to everyone listening to check out that report. It's luckily written in a way that's a little bit comical, but very, very informative. And it comes out every year around the February timeframe. And one of the things that they looked at was, what are the tactics mm-hmm. that are being used by a bad actor to cause a data breach, right? And the number one tactic that was used this year, or actually last year and the prior 2 years, so 3 years running, was the use of a compromised credential to take over an account, which ultimately caused the data breach.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, I mean, the fact that, you know, Verizon is doing a annual report on this, and yep. it sounds like it's been happening for multiple years, you know, I think that lands kind of to the point of that this is a pretty big problem. And so I was hoping maybe you can elaborate a little bit about that, about how big of a problem really is this as account takeover?
Yeah, absolutely. So first, I think you got to look at what's the data that's out there that these bad actors have access to cause this, right? So you think about a compromised credential. And the most common place a compromised credential comes from is from a third-party data breach, right? It's this kind of cyclical cycle. They compromise a site, they take the kind of compromised credentials as well as other data, and then they use it to cause more harm, whether it be another data breach or take over your account, take over your Netflix account, your Amazon account, Facebook account, anything like that. So from a SpyCloud perspective, we're out there and we're gathering all of the data that we can from a third-party data breach, right? And to date, we have roughly 78 billion different assets that we've recovered from a data breach. And we think, or from roughly 13 to 14,000 data breaches. And when you think about an asset, right, just so we're all using kind of the same terminology, an asset to us is an email, it's a password, it's your, you know, address information, it could be your social, your credit card number.
So PII.
PII, exactly. Yep. So today we probably find about 140 different unique kind of data types or data assets that we've categorized. The average breach really only has 7 to 8 in that, and most commonly, it's an email password combination. right? So if we look at just the passwords that we have in our database, we have roughly 18 billion plain text passwords today of that 70 billion.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, it's a significant number. And of those, well, actually it's 20 billion, but 18 billion are in plain text.
Got it.
Right? So that's the scary part, right? So they have your email and then they have a password that's combined to that. And so they can then use that information to try and log into your webmail account, your Salesforce account, your corporate account, those types of things. So they can use that email password combo to pretty simply log in, because if you think about how often people use the same passwords, there's a whole host of studies out there. IBM did a good one in February. Dashlane's done some good ones as well. But ultimately what we've seen is the average person has anywhere from, call it, 4 to 12 unique passwords. Mm-hmm. But one thing that Dashlane, who's a password manager, has found is you would go in there and you'd put in all the different accounts you log into, mm-hmm. right? They see about 200 accounts per person. So if you think about how many sites do I log into, there might be 5 or 10 that you log into daily. But ultimately, if you think of all the accounts that you have your email password in, Dashlane says it's around 200. So if you take that, let's say 4 to 12 passwords, right? But you apply that to 200 different sites, obviously people are using the same passwords yep. over and over and over again. And even if we see some delineation between it, we're normally seeing things like, let's say you use brother as the main and then 82 as the number. Mm-hmm. Might be an uppercase B for one or an exclamation mark at the end for your bank account because that's really secure. But in reality, if you look at the data that's been exposed, let's say that email password combo's out there, it doesn't matter how complex your password is, it could be in the hands of bad actors who can just log in with it.
Yeah, and even if you use something, I mean, there's dictionaries and there's tools that will go and they'll try various combinations that they have kind of the root yeah. of how the password is structured.
Yeah.
They'll go and they'll try things.
We call it fuzzy matching.
There yep. you go.
And so you just kind of change the first character, the last character. And to your point where you mentioned when they were using these dictionaries and tools, traditionally credential stuffing kind of used to be, hey, let's throw a lot against this system. Mm-hmm. But systems have gotten smart, right? And they've been designed as such to say, if I'm seeing 10 logins come from the same IP address, there's something wrong here, right? And that's become more commonplace by a lot of technology providers today. So as with anything, the bad actors have gotten more intelligent and said, well, I can't go and throw a whole bunch of dictionary words against this email. Why don't I go to see if this person already has an exposed password? So my chance of success is statistically significantly higher, right? And so what we'll see is someone coming in with that and trying 4 or 5 different attempts, and they're using a lot of open source technology to do this. So you can go and download things like Sentry MBA or Sniper, which are open source, really available to anyone. And those are open source credential stuffing tools. So you don't have to be a sophisticated bad actor to use these. Mm-hmm. They can download that, and then they can go in something like Pastebin or others and try and find these what are called combo lists. So a combo list is when a bad actor or a group of bad actors take individual breaches. Mm-hmm. They format the file into a singular file with a very standard format. They don't really care where the emails and passwords came from, LinkedIn, MySpace, whatever, some of those more well-known breaches that mm-hmm. had passwords included. And they'll take that information and they can very simply plug that in, just like a click and drag, super easy to use, over into these credential stuffing tools. And then these tools have already been set up with intelligence to fingerprint a site. So remember how I mentioned that some sites will say, hey, if this comes in 10 times from this IP address, let's block that IP address.
Yep, go and lock the account proactively.
Exactly. So what these programs will do, it's constant battle between the good and the bad, right? The bad actors have customized and have open source kind of communities where they can say, hey, here's the new setup file for, I don't know, Amazon, Netflix, doesn't matter, any site. And that gets added into the program and it knows, oh, this is how they're currently tracking or checking for credential stuffing. So it'll intelligently change.
Got it.
And it'll say, well, I'm not going to try that same email password and get rejected four times in a row because I know the site will block it. I'll do three times.
And I'll back off for 10 minutes.
Or it'll plug into a botnet. So you get a little more sophisticated, and some of these bad actors have access to botnets, and they'll just use an IP address from that a machine that they've compromised. So it's a constant battle.
Makes sense.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, they're trying to get through the door with that email password combination. So while it's great to try and stop it from bot detection, if you have that information, right, and you can say, I know this password's been out there before, let's make sure that we don't let this user, you know, an employee, mm-hmm. use that, you can kind of stop them at the door, even if they figure out interesting ways to try and open the door.
Got it. And so, I mean, it sounds like, you know, poor password hygiene is kind of the root, you know, or the main thing that's causing this problem to begin with.
And it's tough, right? Like, I think, you know, we're all in IT, and so we get it. Like, we understand we should have unique passwords for everything.
It's just human behavior.
Exactly. And password hygiene is just really tough for the average person. Yep. You know, I love my parents, but when I think about how they're probably managing passwords, and we've talked about password managers, it's just easier to use what you've done before. You've got your five or six, you rotate it. Sadly, when we see that data, as you can see, an identity monitor that's been compromised, it's not uncommon for you to have a fair amount of passwords you use today that are exposed in the wild.
Yeah, and I've even seen, too, where, you know, people are trying to be diligent about using different passwords, but then they'll go and do things because they're not going to memorize, okay, on this site I use this password. They actually write it down on a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, they don't sticky it to the monitor.
Yeah.
But they'll, you know, they'll put it inside a journal or a notebook that they use on a daily basis, and it has all their credentials, and it's just as bad.
Absolutely. And what's worse is you normally look at that piece of paper and you see the same passwords used multiple times.
Yeah.
So even though you're keeping track, in reality, if I have one of your passwords and you're using it five different times, there's a high likelihood of success that I can get in, or someone could gain access to that account.
Yeah, and I know even on the IT side, you know, when you're installing, you know, pick any product, you know, to in your IT environment to do monitoring or management mm-hmm. or configuration, whatever the use case may be, you know, that product needs unique credentials for your infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then you go and procure another product and you do the same thing. You insert the credentials.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden, okay, I changed the password. Those products, it's not necessarily a bad actor, but those products will go out there and try to use that old set of credentials, and all of a sudden the account's locked.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, I mean, people are natively or inherently will go, what is the, you know, what makes me feel the most secure, but is the easiest path forward?
Yeah. And on the kind of technology provider side, right, they're fighting against friction. Mm-hmm. Right, especially if you think about consumer products, right? They want to let people log in as quickly and easily as possible. So they're really not putting the NIST password framework into play, right? They, you know, sometimes we've all done this even in the IT world. We go to put in a password and it's like uppercase, lowercase, no special character, but you can't have this, you can't do that. Oh, you can't copy into this field. It's a frustrating experience. And so these providers, they need to, and they're trying to balance between how much friction do I introduce to stop account takeover, but I can't introduce so much that even a good person can't get in.
Yeah.
Right? So you kind of have to help people kind of protect them against themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally makes sense. So great. So an account, you know, your information shows up in a breach, you know, so great. Now what happens? So my credentials have been stolen. What typically happens next?
Yeah. So let's talk about how your credentials generally end up. So normally what happens, let's take like a deep dive into the, what we would call the underground, mm-hmm. right? So I think things like dark web, deep web, like more and more in the security world, we're looking at those as buzzwords.
Yep. Right. I've heard dark web.
Yeah, everyone's heard dark web. I mean, Experian does a good job marketing that to people, you know, to say you got to check the dark web and you should buy this product.
Yep.
But ultimately, what ends up happening is a bad actor compromises a site. Could be a million different ways. Could be used because compromised credentials, right? But generally, they will compromise the site and they'll extract the data as quickly as they can in a format in which they are not detected. So there's a good research report. I think the Verizon Data Breach report mentioned this. Something like 56% of breaches took longer than a month to detect.
Okay.
Right? But even if it's a day, right, that data is out there. And then the tail gets pretty long. I mean, think about some of the breaches we've heard about recently. Think about Yahoo and things like that with the whole class action lawsuit that's happening now. But when you think about, they were kind of compromised over a period of time before they knew it. Mm-hmm. You know, those credentials have been floated around for a long time. So they'll go out, they'll extract the data, and ultimately they end up sharing it with a small group.
Okay.
Right? If you think about it from a criminal's perspective, right? You've gone through all this work to compromise this site, right? Or this company. To go and put the data on the dark web for sale immediately doesn't really make a ton of sense. One, there's law enforcement, security companies, all that type of stuff that are monitoring those open forums where you would have a transaction. And so ultimately, now you've just kind of disclosed that the breach happened. Mm-hmm. And now they can go and try and reset those credentials and things like that, notify people don't use it. So now the value of that data's dropped pretty quickly. So that's why you don't see that happen a lot. Outside of kind of reputation harm, right? If the bad actor's goal is to cause harm to an organization just through public amounts, you look at some of the stock prices that will drop after a data breach is announced. So if that's their motivation, but ultimately, again, Verizon Data Breach Report does a good job talking about that. Most bad actors are financially motivated in a compromised
attack. Makes sense. I mean, everybody's quant operated. I want to get something for my work.
Absolutely. So they'll go in, they'll get the data, and then they'll share it with a very small group.
So why do they do that just with a small group?
Well, it's in these communities, it's a lot about building trust, right? Building up your persona. Right. And again, most of these actors, they don't know who's on the other side of that persona. Mm-hmm. Right. So they compromise it, but they share it with a small group of people they think they can trust. Because that small group, just like any criminal gang, like you see in TV, if they're going to rob a bank, you've got the getaway driver. You've got the kind of the, the guy who can crack the safe. You got the person who's the lookout. There's roles.
Yep.
Same thing in these types of communities. So you might have extracted all this data, but you can't wrap your head around it. You can't parse it. Right? So they'll go to someone they know that's really good at data extraction. Then let's say that these credentials are encrypted, which is becoming more and more common, but the encryption that a lot of companies still are using isn't great. So these passwords are very crackable, right? Like one thing, we just had the DoorDash breach was announced.
Yeah, I read about that.
And in their announcement, they say, don't worry, we salted and hashed the passwords, which makes them indecipherable to anyone. Technically, that's not true, right? This day and age, any type of encryption can eventually be hacked.
It's just time.
Exactly. Some can take 2 minutes if you're SHA-1 or MD5, which are popular hashing techniques, although kind of no longer known as encryption because it's so easy. Those can take seconds.
Yep.
All the way to, let's say, hard-coded, salted, peppered, hashes that could take months, if not years. But a lot of companies kind of end up being on that, we've got SHA-1, we're salted, or maybe bcrypt without salt, those types of things. But ultimately, now you've got that person in the underground who's responsible for helping crack those passwords. So it's a group. And then you've got the people who are kind of doing the crime after the crime's been committed. They're going and trying to gain access to high-profile accounts, right? Let's say the CEO of a company. They're trying to use that email password combo. So then you've got like this next layer of fraud that happens. Mm-hmm. They still don't want the breach to be publicly known. They're still not selling the data. They would rather have someone in this group or kind of compromise an account, and they all kind of share in the financial benefit that may come from that. So we see this data stay in that cycle, especially in that longer tail of being used to kind of target people. I see a lot of ransomware happening. Ultimately, ransomware certainly is data that gets, or malware that gets loaded on a machine that can encrypt it, but how they gain access to it, we believe more and more that they're using compromised credentials to log in and to upload this, right? So they can go and do all of that. So they sit on that for anywhere from 12, 16, 24 months, as long as possible, before the data makes it on the dark web, or on Pastebin. Because by the time the data's there, we kind of look at that as a commodity. Mm-hmm. It's already been well filtered, shared, and then that group slowly gets bigger over time. Obviously, there's really no honor among thieves. So if you say, hey, let's not share it with anyone, you share it with your friend, this one shares it with their friend, but slowly that data gets more and more out. So by the time it hits kind of the dark web, as it's defined, the visible dark web, which is also kind of funny when people use that terminology. It's like, well, it's if it's visible,
so,
then
not
it's
not so
really,
dark.
Yeah, it's not so dark. And they know on those forms, like I mentioned before, that's when law enforcement has access to it. So you can see anywhere from, depends on when it becomes public, but 1 month to 2 years when that data is being well circulated, even if it's the breach is known. That database can still be well circulated because people don't remember what password they used. Mm-hmm. And when you get a notice from a company that says, hey, you were compromised as part of this breach, we're sorry, they don't tell you this was the password you used. They don't tell you generally, this is the credit card you had on file. They don't tell you a lot of that info,
yeah.
which is really frustrating from a user perspective, because how are you supposed to protect yourself if you don't know what the bad guys have?
Well, I've seen too, or I've heard that, just because a breach is now public and an organization tells you, hey, we forced a reset on your account, or we recommend you change your password. Okay, 6 months down the line, 12 months, 18 months down the line, the odds of me reusing that same credential again is high because
Absolutely.
Of exactly the behavior that you outlined earlier. And so even if I try it now or in 6 months and it doesn't work, I'm going to keep trying.
Keep going.
I'm going to keep going, like you said, with those tools that are available.
Absolutely. And that's a great point on password reuse. It's interesting. The new NIST guidelines say that you actually should not tell people to change your password every 90 days, which was one of those things like, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to rotate passwords because it's more secure. But exactly to your point, I think what we figured out now is we're just giving bad actors a bigger bite at the apple, more bites at the apple. So now it's better to make sure that you're in the NIST framework that came out, I think it's last summer, but it's now being kind of more heavily rolled out, is one of the main tenets of that is check any of those passwords against what they call a previously breached corpus, which in, I think, normal person talk means a previously breached database, which through Identity Monitor, they're able to do.
So we've talked a little bit, so far already about credential stuffing, but we haven't really kind of dived into that to define what exactly is credential stuffing and what does that mean and how do people what kind of tools are people using in order to do those type of activities?
Sure. So credential stuffing is just simply taking those combo lists, right? And then using those tools that we mentioned, kind of Sentry MBA, Sniper, or you could just, I guess, build your own. But there's 10 other ones that are out there that are constantly being updated. And it's continuing to check those credentials against a third-party site for the purpose of account takeover.
Got it.
Okay, that makes sense. And so from an Identity Monitor perspective, you mentioned that, gathering those credentials. So how are, y'all going about gathering those credentials down in the dark web?
Sure. So, and what we do, and there's two ways to do it, right? You've got to, like with anything, any security posture, anything like this, you've got to have multiple kind of redundancies and techniques. And so just like Fort Knox doesn't just have one lock to gain access, they've got multiple layers of protection. We go about recovering these credentials through multiple ways. So one is you can scan and scrape the dark web. Right. Which again, at that point, these are kind of commoditized credentials. But sometimes someone's trying to cause reputation harm. Sometimes something will pop up that wasn't really actively being traded. So you want to make sure you're monitoring for that. And so that's one of the things we do. And we gather a fair amount of data through there. But the majority of the data we gather is actually through our research analysts. So our research analysts aren't just on these forums waiting for data to get posted. They've actually done the best that they can do to infiltrate these cyber criminal groups, mm-hmm. right? And get to the forums or deeper than the forums where these things are being traded or talked about. And we do our best to socially engineer those bad actors out of that data as quickly
as
possible.
Got it. Okay, got it. So you're trying to go from the top, the higher level to that next level or two down where, like you said, it's a smaller group
exactly.
of people that are sharing information. So how can you get into that group, get invited into that inner circle?
Yeah, so we're moving up the timeline. Our goal as an organization is to limit the value that bad actors get from this type of data, right? If we can make this data no longer valuable, mm-hmm. we can help fight the fight against causing data breaches, right? If there's nothing there to go get anymore, then they'll turn their eyes or techniques somewhere else.
Makes sense. So, let's just say as an organization, we're not a very big organization. So I'm an IT pro responsible for everything. I own security, I own the network, I own the servers.
Yeah.
Or even, I'm in a larger organization. We actually have a security admin, or security pro team separate from our IT professionals. Mm-hmm. And so, whose problem really is it ultimately to solve?
Well, it's everyone's problem, sadly, right? And more organizations are, installing things like chief risk officers, right? CISOs has become incredibly popular as a role more than it was 15, 20 years ago. Even smaller and smaller organizations are having someone on their team. Sometimes it's someone on the IT team because they don't have people dedicated just to security. Mm-hmm. They also kind of own that kind of CISO role, right?
Yep.
And so at the end of the day, to solve it, it relies on the IT group, right? You have access and can communicate to users, here are the credentials through Identity Monitor that have been exposed.
Got it.
Right? So they're able to actually kind of fix the problem, help with the mitigation side of the issue.
Okay, so my credentials are now out there. You know, they're exposed, and you know, now, okay, great, now what do I do?
Well, so user training is always great.
Yep.
Right? Being proactive, trying to educate people about here are the things you can do to be a smarter user, right? I mean, you see all those comics that talk about you can have all this crazy infrastructure and stuff, but it's the person at the end of the
single
keyboard.
Single point of failure.
Yeah, that's your biggest risk. And again, it's understandable, right? Like, we all have a tough time on the IT side, but we know that for us, it's our, you know, on the IT side, it's our day job. Like, this is our responsibility, right? But ultimately, for a user, they're worried about email. They're worried about closing the deal. They're worried about those types of things. So certainly I do education as much as possible, and even reiterated through the every day, every month as you can, not just during Cybersecurity Awareness Month, which is great, which is happening. Multi-factor, great. Little bit of friction.
Yeah, two-factor authentication.
Two-factor authentication is great. It's better to have that friction on the enterprise side. And then using something like Identity Monitor, at least trying to check those credentials, going back to that NIST framework, make sure those credentials that those users are using is not a part of a third-party data breach.
Gotcha. And so how will you know if actually something does happen?
So with Identity Monitor, right, you're able to log in, add your domains, right? So it knows all the employees from this domain anytime SpyCloud finds a credential, right? And we're adding sometimes billions of credentials a month to this, which all flow into Identity Monitor. Anytime when those credentials are found, you'll receive a notification that they were recovered, and you can see exactly the information that was recovered, even the plain text password.
So we talked a lot about, you know, account takeover, you know, and some methodologies and means like two-factor authentication.
Yep.
You know, what would you say is kind of the next big threat in the space that you're seeing?
Yeah, so I talked about two-factor, and two-factor's great, but also everyone in the security community has been adding two-factor. And if you think about it, you're a bad actor. You used to have a lot easier access to this type of data. Now people are putting this new hurdle in front of you, and it's two-factor. Well, I'm going to attack two-factor. How can I go after two-factor? And the most common way of two-factor today is SMS-based two-factor, right?
Correct.
Go to a site, get a text, has the number, put it in.
Yep. I get it from Outlook or Office 365.
Office 365, any website you go into. The problem with that is, and it's also, it's seen a ton of pickup because it's pretty much every consumer gets text now. We're not getting charged 10 cents like we used to.
Yep.
Is that that relies on your phone, right, and your telecom provider. You can, if you're familiar with SIM swapping, whenever, if you've ever traded, hey, I'm gonna go from Verizon to T-Mobile or AT&T, whatever, you can port your number over. Super convenient, really helpful.
Yep.
Also really helpful for bad actors. So we're seeing SIM swapping as becoming a new vector of attack where they're going after it solely for the purpose of that two-factor token. So they'll call up, let's say you're a T-Mobile customer, they'll call up T-Mobile, they'll act like they're you, and there's some great videos online that were done at Black Hat or DEF CON and others about where you can watch someone social engineer a telecom customer service agent into letting them SIM swap. And then they'll gain access to your phone number, they'll go to change your bank account, right? They'll say, oh, I forgot my two-factor, or I need to reset my password. And they'll say, oh, we'll send you this code to make sure it's you. They'll get the code, and then they'll actually swap it back.
Gotcha.
So sometimes that happens at night, depending on who you are and how sophisticated. But we even read a story, or read a story a couple weeks ago about a gentleman in San Francisco, through SIM swapping, got his entire investment account wiped out.
Oh, wow.
$1 million because of that. So
that's crazy. Chris, I appreciate you joining us today on this episode. A lot of great insight around account takeover.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great.
All right. And folks, thank you again for joining our podcast today. We recommend, if you want to see if your information is actually shown up in any third-party breach information or databases, to go to solarwinds.com/identity-monitor and enter your email address and see what you can learn.